Hello and welcome to the New Books Network. I'm your host, James Stansel, for the African American Studies Channel. And today I'm going to be interviewing a professor from the University of Cincinnati. The book is called Connecting the Wire, Race, Space, and Post-Industrial Baltimore. This book by Stanley Corkin is all about that HBO series of yesteryear, The Wire. Very popular show. It's something that comes up in a lot of pop culture discussions. Even now, because a lot of the issues raised in The Wire are still relevant to today, and many shows you see on television today kind of took a lead from The Wire, and what you saw with David Simon's show from those Baltimore city streets. So Stanley Corkin did a great job going season by season and talking about some of the allusions that you see in The Wire, some of the connections to the real world, and doing a thorough analysis. So I really think you're going to enjoy this interview. And I think you're going to enjoy Stan, too. He's a great guy. And we mentioned some of his earlier work. So he's a great film studies scholar. So enjoy. Pull up a seat. Have a listen. And let me know what you think. Connecting the Wire, Race, Space, and Post-Industrial Baltimore by Stanley Corkin, published by the University of Texas Press, on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. Hello, and welcome to the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel, and today I have the great pleasure of being here with the author of the University of Texas Press book, Connecting the Wire, Race, Space, and Post-Industrial Baltimore, Stanley Corkin, and he is the Charles Phelps Taft Professor and Nyhoff Professor of Film and Media Studies in the Department of History and English at the University of Cincinnati in Ohio. Wow, that's a mouthful. How you doing there, Stanley?
I'm good. How are you, James?
Doing great. Doing great. And I'm so happy I could talk with you. We talked offline about how excited I was to get you on the show because I know my audience will love talking with you. The Wire, which is what your book is about, the television series The Wire from HBO. It's one of the most popular shows, and it's really relevant, in today's world. And so, I want to give a shout-out to my friend Patrick McLaughlin up there in Pittsburgh. I hope you're listening because this is your show. You talk with me about The Wire just about every day. So, hopefully, you're going to be the first in line to buy Stan's book. So, Patrick, buy his book immediately.
You'll like the book, Patrick.
Yes, exactly. So you got it. An endorsement from the author himself, Dr. Corkin. All right, maybe we can work out a signed copy for him, Stan. What do you think?
All right, do that. Fair enough.
Maybe we can work that out. But yes, Stanley Corkin here, University of Cincinnati, and he's writing about The Wire. So before we kind of get into, a lot of in-depth discussion about this book and about the television show, Stanley, maybe tell us a little bit about your background as a scholar.
So I grew up in Boston.
Okay.
I went to grad school in Atlanta and in New York.
Which school?
And I went to Emory, got my master's at Emory and my PhD at NYU in American Studies. I worked with the famous American Studies film scholar, the late Bob Sklar, who died just a few years. And I also worked in other disciplines, primarily in history. I worked with the immigration historian David Reimers, who I think... So it was a good kind of broad training. I was always interested in film and, in social life. So film and society, film and history. And those have really been my topics all the way through from when I wrote my dissertation to now. And, I see it as kind of an ongoing process. And I like to think I get better at thinking about, how these things, are involved with one another.
Mm-hmm.
With each project.
So I've connectedness, right?
Right. So, and clearly it's harder to talk about history in film and using certain films as certain TV shows as models. But for certain TV shows or certain films, it works very well because they're really concerned with the world in front of you as it exists now. It's interpretive, but it's definitely, a vision of actuality. And that's, that kind of draws me. So I've written about my first book was about the rise of progressivism and the emergence of film as a medium at the turn of the century, realism and the birth of the modern United States. I actually talk about D.W. Griffith and the racist classic, The Birth of a Nation.
Right.
That book. My second book was about Westerns as a genre, which during the Cold War particularly, and the book is, you know, talks about the way that Westerns became a device for discussing American exceptionalism.
Cowboys as Cold Warriors. Cool title.
Arrived at with an editor after much strife.
We talk about that on occasion on this podcast.
Well, that's part of the Wire title too, but that's, you know, that we'll get to that. And then my third book was, I was trying to bring it up to date. And I actually, this old friend of mine who's a labor organizer, actually ran for senator as a socialist candidate in Ohio a while ago, kept saying, well, you know, the action is in the 70s. Action's in the 70s and 80s around the emergence of globalization, neoliberalism. Right. And I started looking at these films that I had, you know, really liked and had seen in the 70s, just around the time I moved to New York, which New York, when I moved there in the late 70s, was a mess. You know, it was kind of a disaster. And that was kind of the aftermath of the city's default and bankruptcy in 1975. So I looked at this group of movies that were all shot in New York. They're all New York specific movies. And the book is called Starring New York, Filming the Crime and Glamour in the Long 1970s. And it's really a book about, you know, how we envision and metaphorize the emergent neoliberalism, emerging globalization in through popular culture in the 70s. So, you know, it's interesting that, you know, almost every kind of economic shift was kind of tried in New York in the 70s. So privatization of certain regions of the city, you know, extreme racist policing, all those things kind of came to the fore. Elaboration of tax codes, a lot of abated real estate, good for developers, all of that stuff, you know, kind of was tried out, intentionally, really, by a group of finance guys working with the city government in this late 70s and early 80s. So, it's interesting to kind of look at the films through the prism of that place-specific history and the broader economic history of the period.
Wow, those are some great titles there, Stan. And, you know, I'll just mention them again, you know, because if folk really like Connecting the Wire, they should go back and check out some of your earlier works as well.
So, yeah. I mean, they would see continuities. I mean, when I write, I generally, you know, I focus on the visual materials at hand. So there's, you know, I kind of go where they lead me to some degree. But methodologically, you know, I'm always interested in, you know, the relationship between, you know, a material history and the visual object.
So so one book is Starring New York, where you're talking about films from the 1970s in New York. And then you have Cowboys as Cold Warriors, which is about, you know, the Western and, you know, the Cold War era, United States. And then you talk about, like, around the turn of the century, 19th to 20th century there, realism and the birth of the modern United States, where you deal with Birth of a Nation, right? And some other films of that.
That's right. I mean, just same thing in the New York book. I also deal with a cycle of black exploitation films shot in New York during the period, like Superfly and Cotton Comes to Harlem and so on.
Okay, yeah. All right, so I just wanted to mention those titles again, you know, so folk, you know, Connecting the Wire is not the first. It's the most recent in a long line or, you know, a significant line of books by Stanley Corkin. And we're here with, again, Stanley Corkin, the author of Connecting the Wire. You know that television show, The Wire, Race, Space, and Post-Industrial Baltimore. Stanley Corkin is the author, and he's the Taft Professor and Nyhoff Professor of Film and Media Studies in the Department of History and English at the University of Cincinnati in Ohio. And the book is brought to us by our friends at the University of Texas Press. So, Stanley, what got you into The Wire? I mean, I know you talked a little bit about your interest in terms of, like, the other books and how it's kind of a continuation, but what got you into, you know, The Wire? Can you tell us about that? And, you know, maybe what type of methods did you use to do this research?
Fair enough. So I finished the New York book, and doing the New York book, you know, I was really interested in the way in which films, visual media, give us a sense of relative space. You know, the way they envision a city, the way they envision you know, as cities were discrete areas of the cities in relation to other areas of the city, the way in which they look at the city within, you know, networks of global exchange or the remoteness from networks of global exchange.
Right.
So, you know, that was kind of the thing I picked up, you know, more explicitly in the New York book. So I've kind of been working around the edges of this in the Western book, because when you talk about the frontier, you're talking about spatial metaphors.
Right.
So in the book, I was more interested in explicitly in geography. And I was thinking about a next project. And, I had never subscribed to HBO, right? and I had heard about this series, but I didn't really know much about it. And my daughter, who was, I'm trying to think of, at the time, was in her very early 20s.
Okay. So
like, she said, you know, I just watched the show. She was at University of Chicago. She said, I just watched the show. I think you really like it. So I, in my frugality, I got them out of the library. But, you know, when you get it's hard to get them in sequence, right?
Right.
You know, I'm very diligent. I'm a hard worker. So I got them by the season, and I started watching through. And as I watched them, I really got sucked into. Yeah, I'm sure this has happened to you.
Sure.
I got sucked into the narrative, right? Mm-hmm. And also, but for me, you know, so I in Cincinnati, a city that's similar to Baltimore.
Absolutely.
Right. You know, it's on the same latitudinal line, pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a border state. It has some of the same, maybe the same proportional racial makeup mm-hmm. these days. Same issues, and a city that, you know, is clearly now it's kind of succeeding, but you know, it's taken a long time. It's a city that was really, you know, having a lot of trouble figuring out what it was going to be
right.
in this world after the 1980s. So in Cincinnati, I've done lots of things. I've worked in local politics through school issues.
Mm-hmm.
I've coached my son in various sports. But one of the things I did is I coached an all-African-American baseball team,
okay.
you know, playing in the city. And, you know, in addition to the other experiences I had, this really kind of gave me a window into, you know, in a way that most people don't have into, most white people don't have into the, you know, the lived experience.
Right, right.
Of being an African American in a city that is, prone to racial prejudgments,
and at that age as well.
Right, right. So, I would cart these kids around, and you know, we'd go to places, play these white teams, and we'd have all, just the things these kids had to put up with was, you know, amazing to me, right? So, you know, it gets you things you know, but things when you experience, they're different. They're, you know, known in a different way.
Absolutely.
So watching The Wire, you know, kind of made sense to me. It showed me a world that I had been around and that I could, you know, that I had these insights into, and, you know, it kind of filled it out for me.
Ah, right, right.
So it was deep. It was not just, you know, compelling in terms of narrative, but it was deeply interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was really the next thing I wanted to talk about. So initially when I started doing, you know, when I was watching the show, I was picking up all these kind of historical references.
Mm-hmm.
And the historical references, it turns out, were important, but it was really more the sociological references
okay.
that came out of the book. You know, the way in which they show what that the world of African Americans living in the inner city who do not have access to devices that will create social mobility,
mm-hmm.
right? So you know this is the stuff that, you know, the interesting thing is I had read William Julius Wilson, and so had David Simon,
mm-hmm.
and you know a lot of what he writes about,
the great sociologist.
Right, right. You know, a lot of what he writes about is this kind of bifurcation of African American class,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and you know that's all over The Wire. It is substantially a show of African American characters,
mm-hmm.
and but you know not all African American characters are the same. So that it has, you know, it's the crime element is within an inner city, and it's, you know, people who are very entrepreneurial, some of them.
Yes.
But and brilliant. but they don't have access to the formal devices that allow you to, you know, go to college or, you know, learn a trade or whatever, right? And so the police are substantially African-American, too. You know, actually, David Simon does a reasonable job of representing the racial makeup of the force. And though we know that, you know, that just because a police force is integrated and proportional doesn't mean that, you know, kinds of residual racism or racial practices don't exist within the force. And, you know, this, Simon's, you know, talking about Baltimore, right? And Simon is very, you know, he's smart and sensitive to these things, and he kind of laid it out. And you have to, you know, pay a lot of attention to get, you know, the world that he's elaborating. So that's what I attempted to do in this book. I tried to, you know, watching is different. You know, it kind of washes over you. You have these insights; they're fleeting, they come and they go, but they're, you know, interesting to you. They pique your interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, writing, you got to kind of put it all together.
Right.
Tell the story that you think, you know, the bigger story that you think these allusions that these allusions refer to in the context of these five seasons. And that's what I'm trying to do in the book.
Right. Yeah. And you did. You definitely connected us, so to speak, to The Wire. And maybe it was, it's a great read. And for people who like the series, I really do believe, Stanley, they'll like your book, you know, because it's one of those things where you can go back and just kind of, oh, right, you know, this is that connection. This is in that connection. This is how it kind of relates in the larger, you know, world. And, you know, this is, of course, an academic book because you're you know, a scholar, a very good one. But it's, in my view, definitely accessible to the average person who wants to, you know, maybe know a little bit more and dig a little bit deeper into the things that they see in The Wire and how The Wire can relate to the real world, just like it spoke to you about your experiences in Cincinnati with those young men.
Right, right. So it's, I mean, that's exactly what I was trying to do. I mean, I don't have to try to reach a general audience. It's just the, you know, I'm trying to tell a story in the way in which I'm telling it is necessarily accessible, you know, as a matter of my predisposition, not as a matter of, you know, sinking out an audience. It's just, it's a, you know, it when it works, you just connect, right? And that's, you know, I don't try to go into the deep into the academic weeds. I try to explain things with clarity so that, you know, I'm clarifying it for myself in terms that I think are valuable and ideally people will find it accessible.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I really felt like that. I felt like you were like myself. I mean, you were a fan of the series and you were kind of explaining it for yourself,
you know,
and sharing your observations and realizations with us as well in your book. So well done, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And, you know, and again, I'm here with the author of Connecting the Wire, Race, Space, and Post-Industrial Baltimore. And we're on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. And this work is published by the University of Texas Press, our friends there. And the author is Stanley Corkin. He's a Charles Phelps Taft Professor and a Nyhoff Professor of Film and Media Studies in the Department of History and English at the University of Cincinnati in Ohio. And again, the book is Connecting the Wire, about that well-known television show. David Simon, I think, is the creator, correct?
That's right.
All right. The creator of that show that appeared on HBO, Connecting the Wire. Well, the show is The Wire.
Right.
Dr. Corkin's book is Connecting the Wire.
That's right.
And he's connecting you to The Wire and giving you some deeper understanding of The Wire if you read his book. And so how long did it take you, Stanley, to kind of go through this process and complete this work?
So now it's 2017. So it probably took me, you know, from wire to wire, I'd say 5 years.
All right. No pun intended.
Right. I didn't even mean it. So I think that, you know, when I started the book, I thought, well, this, you know, it uses a lot of the methods that I used in the New York book. I'll just, you know, knock this bad boy out. Well, it doesn't work that way. You know, it's a lot of revising and, finding the narrative, finding the angle into each season. And, you know, it just, and even production takes a while.
Right.
So it, you know, it's just for me anyway. For other people, can knock them out probably, but for me, it's a more exacting process, and it involves a lot of revision. And it involves, you know, I'm always extending my areas of knowledge when I do one of these books, right? Oh, because cool. I'm kind of following where it takes me. And, so even the kind of ancillary reading,
and then
rewatching the show and rewatching the show and rewatching the show. So, it becomes a pretty involved process.
Right. And to make sure you miss anything.
I like to think that each book gets better because I've learned more.
Absolutely. And as humans, that's what should happen. We should improve a little bit more each time.
Right. So I get better at it and I know more.
And it would be great if films work that way too, but they don't know.
No, absolutely not. Sequels, the more they do it, the less good it is, right?
Yeah, that's the opposite of probably, how books are.
Well, The Wire, by the fifth season, which is an interesting season conceptually, but it's dramatically not that good. Almost everybody who writes about it thinks that.
Right.
And I think, they were tired. They were burnt out. Dan Simon was on to the next project, and they had enough Baltimore.
But they were going to try as long as they could to, keep it going, I guess, as long as the money was coming in, right?
Well, I think they had they contracted for a fifth season before they did the fourth. And, walking away from that would have been hard to do.
What do they call it? Jumping the shark at some point.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, there's, you can always tell. Sometimes, shows come back to, coherence, but you can tell that when a show is just kind of, unraveling.
Right. And it's time to kind of end it. Yeah, in a sense. And so you mentioned earlier, Stan, a little bit about your title and how you came to that title, or how the title came to you, so to speak. And it's always interesting to hear authors talk about that because, the average person thinks, you write the book, you choose the title, and you choose the visuals, the artwork on the cover. And so I really like people to understand that it doesn't always work that way.
That's a fact. So this title, I always wanted the subtitle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the main title I had a working title. I don't even remember what it was. It wasn't that good. And then when I came time to finally title the book,
mm-hmm.
my suggestion was The Wire Unwound. It's like Prometheus Unbound. I thought that was really clever. And the guy thought it was really stupid. So we went back and forth for a while, and he wanted some sort of play on words that included The Wire.
Right.
Right. So, okay. So we argued, and I said, I gave it up, and he gave me the subtitle. So that was the agreement. And my book cover was not that book cover, which is, it's interesting. So he mm-hmm. chose the first shot of the first of the credit pre-credit sequence mm-hmm. in the first episode of the first season. Right. So the snot boogie scene. Right.
That's sitting out on the stoop there.
Right. So, which is a great scene and is a great introduction to the show. But my scene, what I wanted for the company, I think in season three, just before Stringer gets killed, not to ruin it for anybody.
Oh, too late. Go ahead.
Too late. There's a scene where Avon Barksdale and Stringer are celebrating their success.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on the balcony of Stringer's condo
mm-hmm.
in a new building overlooking the harbor, right? And they're drinking cognac. And then, I talk about this in the chapter on season three
mm-hmm.
that Stringer says he has to get up in the morning. He can't stay and drink with Avon. And, that's kind of him, aspiring to a 9-to-5 corp, kind of businessman's existence. But it's a great shot, because it kind of recognizes the pinnacle of their success. And, the world is the Baltimore that they've always aspired to, and has the Legs Mason, the big financial services
right.
company sign over in the new development in the Inner Harbor just in front of him. So I thought, it was a dark shot, and it kind of gets their backs, but you can see them some in profile. And I said, bring up the light a little bit. Yeah, that's, you know, that's the cover. And there was no question about it. I still think so. Like, I didn't know that they had shifted the picture until the book came out. And I said, I said to my wife, what am I going to do? And I gave it up. So, you know, I've come to like it, you know. I don't know if it's better or not, but, you know, it does the job. And I defer, you know, the book people, they
know
imperatives, right? Right. So no problem.
So what's the popular expression now is stay in your lane,
right?
You know, so
right.
I guess they let them handle the promotion production part and you handle the writing part, I guess.
And anyway, you know, in the end, if they want to do it a certain way, they can do it, right?
They can. Well, I like the title Connecting the Wire.
I like
your title too, Stan, but I must say I like that title a little bit
better. I think so too. So he was right about that. I give that up.
And you know, and I think with this picture, you know, and I could kind of, as you were explaining it, I could kind of see why he'd want to choose that, because it's like the very beginning.
Right, it's the introduction to the show.
So, you know, people maybe would recognize that, and you know, it's on the cover. And then, you know, it's showing that grittiness,
right,
you know, of Baltimore. I think yours is kind of more, which I can understand, you know, why you'd want to do that. That's a whole thing for another show.
Right.
But, you know, want to show like the upward mobility and, you know, and the end kind of thing. But, you know, others who maybe don't necessarily see things or understand things the way that your approach or mine would say, okay, this is what The Wire is all about.
Right.
This gritty street, you know, kind of thing. And it is that, but it was more than that too. Right?
I mean, I've shown that clip so many times and I still, each time I watch it, I chuckle, you know, and the line is, you mean someone whose mother named him Omar Isaiah Betts forgot to bring his Kleenex one day.
I mean, it's a wonderful show, and, you know, shout out Mr. Simon for doing such a great job, for giving Stan something to write about here.
I appreciate it.
And yeah, it definitely kept your attention. You know, when you were saying how you kind of got caught in with the DVDs, I was thinking about, you know, now with streaming, with,
right,
you know, Netflix and those kind of shows, how you can just keep watching back to back to back.
Well, HBO Go, you know, has
right,
everything that they've ever done. And you can, you know, you can binge watch any show or show the Showtime streaming option too, right?
Yeah. Just,
you know, so this stuff is it's so easy, so accessible these days to for a subscriber, or, you know, people, I know that they maybe they're not supposed to do this, but they share
yes,
passwords and
yeah,
you know, so this stuff is much more available, even on some of it's, you know, some portion of it is available on YouTube.
And we're not condoning sharing passwords at all. Stan was just talking about the fact that those kind of things do happen in the real world, right?
They do. Well, I think that, you know, those streaming services have, you know, allow for a certain degree of password sharing
within the same family and stuff like that.
Right.
So absolutely,
number concurrently, you know, at the same time, so many people can watch.
And so we're talking about, we're here on the African American Studies Channel, the New Books Network, having a great time here talking with my new friend Stanley Corkin about his book, Connecting the Wire: Race, Space, and Post-Industrial Baltimore, brought to us by our friends from the University of Texas Press. And yes, you are right. What's that gentleman's name with the Connecting the Wire that chose the cover and the title?
Jim Burr.
Jim Burr, you were right.
You're right.
yes, this is it's a great cover, and the title is awesome as well. And, you know, Stanley and I were just talking about streaming services, Amazon, Netflix, what you mentioned, the HBO Go,
yes,
so on and so forth. And so I would recommend, you know, even if you haven't seen all the seasons of The Wire, or even if you haven't started, pick up Stanley's book and watch it and read as you go. You know, you can get instant analysis, you know, make instant connections and pick up all those allusions and those important things and think about today's world and your city. I'm in Houston. You're in Cincinnati, you know, think about, well, Cincinnati area, and you think about your connections as a reader or as a viewer, to wire to your city, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what Stanley did.
I think that the book enriches your sense of what the series is doing. So, you know,
right,
you have the stamina, you know, probably a good thing to do is to watch it through once and then watch it through again with the book.
Right. And, well, it's a great series, so that shouldn't be a problem.
No, I agree. Two times through, you know, that two times through is good. I don't know if about a third, but two times.
Maybe a little too much violence and you know, and some kind of bad situations there if you go to the third time. But, I mean, certainly, I mean, it's a great series. And, you know, and as we have things that happen in the world and as you have movies and things come out, I often hear people, you know, reference The Wire. You know, and they make those connections, you know, to The Wire, particularly when you had the situation with the police brutality,
right?
You know, or alleged police brutality or alleged police misconduct here recently in Baltimore that shined a new light. And, you know, people were interviewing Simon and, you know, the Wire was coming back into the forefront.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, it's amazing how contemporary the series feels.
Right.
Because the social circumstances, the city that the series depicts have not really changed. Maybe they've changed a little. You know, the thing that the series gets a little, but it probably if it was redone today, it would get more, is the way in which the sprawling gentrification of the
right
moves poor people to the inner-line suburbs. Those places take on a lot of the difficulties that formerly were lodged in the inner cities. I mean, that's when during the last presidential campaign, when Trump was talking about the inner city, most African-Americans, of course, don't live in the inner city, right? And a lot of African-Americans who, you know, poor African-Americans lived in the inner cities are being displaced because you know, more prosperous people of all races want the real estate. And that's really happening in Baltimore. I mean, I was there a few years ago, and most of the neighborhoods where Simon shot remained, you know, pretty on the edge. But the downtown just gets fancier and fancier.
Mm-hmm. Every year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Building more and more stuff like the hotels and, you know, casinos and all those things in the, you know, in that Baltimore, D.C. area. I mean, it's changing everything.
Right. So just, you know, even just putting the ballpark downtown, you know, was the beginning of redevelopment, which is also kind of a model for urban redevelopment all over the country.
Absolutely.
Free ball, you know, for rich people.
Well, yeah. The views expressed by Dr. Stanley Corkin are not necessarily the views of the New Books Network. We have to throw that in there sometimes.
That's okay. We did it in Cincinnati too. They actually built a new ballpark, but they put it on the riverfront rather than in the neighborhoods because they were afraid that people from the suburbs wanted to get in and out of the city in a hurry. So they didn't do that, but they should have actually. But, you know, that's certainly the trend. And actually, in season five, you know, we have we feature the Camden Yards, which is a great ballpark. You know,
it is.
It's very good. And it really was an anchor for a kind of downtown redevelopment.
And, you know, and you know, you mentioned about, you know, redevelopment, some of those things. And I recall when The Wire was on, there was some, you know, some criticism of it. And you know, we can look kind of in retrospect, but just people said, you know, you shouldn't have a show like The Wire because it makes Baltimore look bad. And everybody thinks Baltimore is just this bad area or whatever. You know, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that what I generally think about people who say things like that is the people who think it makes the city look bad and generalize from the show, they're not from Baltimore anyway.
Right.
You know, because they already have a certain fear of urbanness. So an urban phobia, we could call it. But and I think also think that if you constrain, you know, an artist, a producer, a film, a TV show from showing what's, you know, the world, you know, then it makes the media, you know, it defangs the medium. It makes it irrelevant.
Right.
So, you know, Simon had been a police reporter and had, you know, he had done that. Did you ever, you know, the show The Corner?
Yes.
And the book The Corner, which is a kind of ethnography of the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the
great series.
Right. So, you know, Simon had, you know, deeply involved himself in this world. So it's not like he was making it up. I mean, there are conventions of narrative that you have to put in. But his eye is really, and his sensibility is really a reporter's sensibility. So he's not showing you things that aren't there. So I think that, you know, people who say it puts the city in a bad light, well, if that's the city, that's the city, right?
It is what it is.
Right. And it's not the whole city. And if people are outraged, they should do something about it.
I was just going to say that, right? If you don't like what you see in The Wire, you know, you could try to affect some change,
right,
in Baltimore or in your community if you don't want to see a wire made in your town.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, one of the interesting things in the series, you know, a lot of people's favorite season is season 4, mm-hmm, which deals with inner city schools, which is a subject.
Right, you know, right. I hear about that one all the time.
Right. And it's, you know, it's absolutely true that they – kids who need the most get the least. And that, you know, the historical avenue for social mobility is the public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And in the regime of neoliberalism, those schools have been largely defunded. And now if we, you know, follow the fortune of the Prince and Amway families, the DeVos family, they'll be completely privatized. And that, you know, those vouchers never adequately fund access to better schools. What they do is they move the chairs on the Titanic so that, you know, what happens is that people profit from the misserving of poor students. So, you know, instead of putting money into public schools, and, you know, the people know the models of education that work, and, you know, it's interesting. So the big intervention in season 4 is the ex-cop Przybylowski becomes a teacher, and he really gets involved with his students, and he tries to affect their lives. But the thing that's so difficult is that there's no institutional device to aid him in doing it. So that's the thing that works in inner-city schools, is these kind of comprehensive programs that, you know, are quite expensive and, you know, involve, you know, multidisciplinary aspects of education writ large. So, you know, it's smart. You know, it's a very smart season, and it really shows you the difficulties in doing the things that'll possibly affect the kind of social change that those people are implicitly talking about when they're saying, well, you know, the city is a wreck. Well, the city's a wreck, then, you know, why don't you get these, you know, allow for, you know, schools that are physically kempt, you know, new schools, good facilities, you know, their adequate staffing of teachers. I mean, Przybylowski's not one of the telling things is in that season is that Przybylowski is not a certified teacher. And the thing I like about him is he's been a cop, because the people who've been in the system, you know, no fault of their own, they look at schools as social control, not education. So it's a very interesting season. It's, you know, kind of replete with social commentary, and it's not a rebuttal to people who complain about, you know, showing that Baltimore. But, you know, if you nudge it a little bit, you can see that, you know, the critique is, if it was heated, would be an effective one.
And it's, you know, and it's showing people that maybe who don't know or don't see that world, of course it is fiction, but I mean, there's, you know, as you said, with Simon, there's a lot of truth in what's there, which is why people like The Wire. I mean, it's exposing, you know, maybe a side of the world that a lot of people, you know, maybe haven't seen or aren't as familiar with. It's forcing them to look at it through an entertaining narrative.
Right. So that, and I think that that's the power of the show, that the narrative, and you know, you get involved with the characters, and, you know, you kind of access that world.
Absolutely. And that world is The Wire, the famed and legendary HBO series created by David Simon. And we're here with the author of a book on that great series. It's called Connecting the Wire. Race,
Obama's favorite TV show.
Barack Obama's favorite TV show. An endorsement. We should have got him to do a little back blurb.
It would have been hard to do, but I would have appreciated it.
But the book is Connecting the Wire, Race, Space, and Post-Industrial Baltimore. Stanley Corkin is the author, and we're here on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. And Stanley is a professor, a Taft Professor and Nyhar Professor of Film and Media Studies in the Department of History and English at the University of Cincinnati in Ohio. And earlier in the podcast, we talked about some of his earlier works. I think you should check those out as well. And the Connecting the Wire, his latest book, just came out this year. It's pretty fresh off the presses, as they say.
That's right.
And, you know, one of the things I, you know, that I wanted to make sure that I mentioned as you were talking about the education piece in that season, I'm glad you brought that up, Stan, because I wanted to talk about, you know, some of the, you know, those kind of current events and kind of social commentary aspects of The Wire. But it really, that season reminded me of another HBO documentary. You may or may not have seen it. It's called Hard Times in Douglas High, Frederick Douglass High School there in Baltimore.
Oh, really? I've never seen it.
Yeah, I'll share that with you offline if you're interested in that. But it was like a 90-minute documentary, and it was just, you know, it was showing to teachers in schools there and how difficult it was for them to kind of go through the year and how out of control some of the students were. And exactly what you said, the difficulties the principal and the teachers had, you know, of getting the support, is really, really kind of sad. And, you know, I was a teacher for almost 20 years myself, you know, in all different kinds of schools. And, you know, the first time I watched that with my wife, you know, it just made me think, oh, my gosh, you know, it's horrible to have to deal with students in that kind of situation.
It's tough. I mean, I taught at Atlanta Federal Prison when I was a very young man.
Oh, my goodness.
And
you're still a young man, Stan.
I was a lot younger then. It was when I was, I mean, I was 24 years old. I was a relatively new grad student. And that program was administered by Mercer in Atlanta.
Okay.
And I needed a job, and this guy called me and said, "Well, I have a class for you, two classes actually." And I said, "Yeah, where are they?" And he said, "They're at the federal prison." And I thought, "I don't know." And then I said, "Well, you know, you can't really turn down a job if you don't have a job." So I took it.
Absolutely.
And it was really an education. I mean, I spent two quarters there, spring quarter and summer quarter, two classes each quarter. And I learned a lot. I mean, Atlanta Federal Pen was eventually closed down because it was built as a Victorian structure. It was very hard to police a social worker. It was killed right after I was left there. It was definitely, you know, I learned a lot about the relationship between prisoners and guards, a lot about, you know, what it is like to be incarcerated. Most of my prisoners were Vietnam vets and drug offenders.
Mm.
So, you know, right. So people who, you know, were not nefarious criminals, they were mostly guys who, you know, had become addicts in Vietnam and didn't have access to decent treatment. So it was
just kind of victims of circumstance, so to speak.
Pretty much. And so that was very interesting to me. And that also, you know, was, I always think of that as an experience that, you know, gave me insights into, you know, what it means to, you know, what the drug trade is, what it means, you know, who's in it, you know, how that functions as a social group.
Mm. And there's a recent series, I don't know if you've seen it, it's called on Netflix, Luke Cage, Marvel's Luke Cage.
My son watches it. He loves it.
And, you know, it reminds me a lot of The Wire. I mean, it's obviously only 13 episodes, but there are some aspects to me. You might maybe have to ask your son and maybe take a look at yourself.
He told me I would like it, so I should probably check it out.
Yeah, because it reminds me of, you know, a lot of The Wire. But we'll have to talk about that later offline if you get a chance to watch it. And I'll send you my review that I did for Entertainment Fuse. You know, I'm a television critic as well, so you can kind of get a feel for that. But it reminds me a lot of The Wire. So you haven't seen it yet, so maybe part two we'll have to come back and get you to share with the audience your thoughts and if there's a connection, or I guess people can contact you as well. I mean, if they, you know, are you open to hearing from? Yeah.
And, you know, so you can find me if you just Google me, you know, you can find my my university account, uc.edu. So, you know, it's for any professor at a public university, you know, the access information is really readily available.
So if you want to talk with Stan or share your thoughts on The Wire or any of his other works, you heard that, folks. Feel free to get in contact with him at University of Cincinnati. Maybe you could they could help you get involved with whatever your next book project is or something, give you some ideas about it.
I'm always looking for new ideas.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, you go, and then I'll
Okay. Well, what I was going to say is when you were talking a little earlier and you were talking about the educational aspects of The Wire, I was thinking, man, I could see, you know, another book project. You seem to have some excitement there, Stanley. I was going to say that could be another project, some education type films, you know, talking about some of these issues.
The project I've been working on is A related project. It's about Boston as a as a media presence, but also as a kind of post-industrial brand in in the same period, in the period after the 1970s. And I just finished an essay for a collection on a group of films that were shot between really the only films really that use Boston as a setting in any pronounced way between 1973 and 1982. I wrote about Friends of Eddie Coyle, The Brink's Club, and The Verdict. But I talk a lot about the busing crisis, which will be a chapter in the bigger book. And you know, I was not living in Boston at the time. I was, you know, I'm trying to think. So, you know, I was at college, you know, when this kind of came to the fore. And so I would read about it, but I didn't experience it directly. But certainly, you know, the bus, you know, that the issues of school integration in Boston were a huge, you know, national event. And they, again, suggest the difficulties of urban education, both for poor whites and poor African Americans. You know, I mean, on one level, you know, not condoning the behavior, but, you know, to send, you know, to move poor whites across town to sit next to poor African Americans is, you know, there's a justification, but there's also, you know, a bigger question being asked about how we define, about space, really, about how we define districts and, you know, what about all these abutting suburban districts and, you know, how do we, you know, change school funding mechanisms. So I am interested in that, and it kind of finds its way into the next project.
Okay. Well, you kind of took my next question I was going to ask there, you know, because I know we're getting a little long here. I don't want to keep you too long. I met your lovely wife earlier. Y'all probably have a nice dinner planned or some.
Well, one of the things I talk about in the next book is also sports. And one of the things I reference in that chapter is the thing that just happened with Adam Jones, you know, and this is part of the Boston thing.
Right there in Boston. Right.
But, you know, that this really gentrified, you know, educated city that's succeeding in by, you know, almost all measures, you know, some knucklehead, you know, is spewing out racial hatred in the midst of a crowd of, you know, 40,000 people around, you know, all kinds of people, children, you know, that is part of the story. So that, you know, the justification is part of a historical reference, I think.
So your next work is going to be on Boston. Are there any other projects that you have that you're working on?
No, this will do it for me. So, you know, I think of it as a big book. So I'll talk about films. I'll talk about the imprint of sports teams, particularly the Red Sox, a little bit about the Celtics. You know, one of the things that I always think about is that, you know, Bill Russell always talked about Boston as the most toxic place he could ever play. And, you know, there's stories about
Celtics legend, right?
Stories about, you know, racial incidents he had while living in Boston, you know, are part of the story. I actually met Bill Russell was at my daughter's, his grandson was graduating University of Chicago with my with my daughter, and he was standing there wearing his three Celtics rings, and I said to my daughter's boyfriend at the time, I said, it's Bill Russell over there, and I know he hates to be approached, you know, hates it, right? And I said, but it's Bill Russell. So I went over and I talked to him for a minute. I shook his hand. He was very gracious. I turned my back and he was gone.
he had been recognized.
He had been recognized. You know, but, you know, if you're 6'9" and you're wearing three big, you know, diamond rings with Celtics insignias on it, you know, you might be recognized.
It would be very difficult to not be. Wow. So, yeah, well, definitely when you get that finished, I know it took you about 5 years to do The Wire, so it may be a while, but I definitely want you back on the show.
I would love to come, and I hope this book comes out as well as The Wire book did. I mean, I'm proud of the work I did, and I think that, you know, it offers a lot to fans of the show and if people who might think they could be fans.
Right.
Of the show.
Potential fans of the show. And like I said, shows like Luke Cage or, you know, some of these other shows that have kind of similar themes, you know, they can look back to The Wire as a show that was an inspiration, you know. So they can go back, or American Crime, you know, the anthology series that ABC has right now.
Right. Also a very good show.
Yeah, and so they could go back, if they like those things, go back and watch The Wire and read Stanley's book, Connecting the Wire, Race, Space, and Post-Industrial Baltimore, University of Texas Press. And we're here with the author, Stanley Corkin, of the University of Cincinnati. And on that note, Stan, I'm going to turn you loose, and you go and enjoy your day. Thank you so much. You know, it was a great interview.
I enjoyed it.
I really think our audience, our listeners, are going to enjoy it. And if they want to talk with you about The Wire, yeah, you know, email Stan if you have some ideas or something you want to share with him about Boston. You know, they can do that as well. All right.
Okay.
Absolutely. On that note, we're going to end it here on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. I'm your host, James Stansel. And Stan, if you don't mind, if you want to say goodbye to the audience.
Thank you for having me, James, and goodbye to all listeners. And I hope you enjoy the book and
absolutely
and learn from the interview.
Absolutely. And the book, again, is Connecting the Wire, and it's published by the University of Texas Press. And thank you so much, Dr. Corkin.
Thank you.
And we'll talk a little further offline. And everyone, thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you next time on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. Take care, peace, and love. All right, we're back here on the New Books Network, the African American Studies channel. I'm your host, James Stansel. And hope you enjoyed that interview there with Stanley Corkin of University of Cincinnati. His book, Connecting the Wire, Race, Space, and Post-Industrial Baltimore, Stanley Corkin, University of Texas Press. And he told us his next book is going to be about Boston. So I'm hoping to get him back and talk a little bit more about film, television, entertainment, and how it relates to these cities. Of course, this one's about Baltimore, and he's already done something on New York. So he's a very interesting writer and a great scholar. And he's, you know, if you like The Wire and you want to drop him a line at University of Cincinnati, he's definitely open to it. Or if you have any ideas about Boston or any of his other work, he definitely would love to hear from you. So on that note, I'm going to wish you peace and love. I hope you enjoyed Connecting the Wire with Stanley Corkin. And we'll see you next time on the African American Studies channel of the New Books Network. I'm your host, James Stansel. Peace and love.